From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. I want to start by introducing you to someone.
My name is Joel Clement. I was a former policy director in the Department of the Interior.
You've had an interesting couple of years, huh?
Yes, it has been interesting, yeah, for sure.
Joel is a whistleblower. He went from saving American refugees of climate change to becoming a bit of a refugee himself, a Trump refugee. First, we should tell you what Joel was doing at the Interior Department before President Trump took office.
I was focusing my work on the Alaskan Native villages along the Arctic coast facing the direct impacts of climate change.
I cannot imagine how cold that must have been. I've been to Fairbanks and Juneau, and I'm from Florida. I thought I was going to die every second I was there.
You know, I'll tell you, it's not as cold as it should be. We saw open water in February.
While there's a lot of controversy over climate change, scientists agree. The polar ice cap is melting. Last winter was the warmest yet.
In Alaska, warmer temperatures are melting the permafrost. Villages are literally disappearing.
A congressional audit and the Army Corps of Engineers have identified these four Alaskan villages in desperate need of immediate relocation.
The Alaska village in danger of being swallowed by the sea. And what the people who live there are doing to preserve their way of life.
There's a slow-moving disaster taking place up there right now because these villages along the Arctic, they're very narrow islands and peninsulas that have been locked in place by permafrost and protected by the sea ice, particularly in the fall when the storm season comes. And that's no longer the case. And those storm surges and waves are chewing away at this melting permafrost. So these villages are right on the brink of being wiped right off the map.
Joel's job was to figure out how to save them or even relocate those villages. His work got the attention of the White House under President Obama.
Reduce sea levels, leaves villages unprotected from floods and storm surges. Some are in imminent danger. Some will have to relocate entirely.
Obama was the first president to visit the Arctic, and he mentioned your work.
That's right. There was a lot of focus on the Arctic. Once you have a sense of what's going on up there, you realize that it's not just ecosystems that are in peril, that there are Americans that could become refugees in their own country any year now if we don't take action.
Obama asked Congress to budget $400 million to help those communities and move them if necessary.
President Obama has done everything he can to get in the way of American energy.
Instead, Trump was elected with a very different approach to energy and the environment.
My administration will seek not only the American energy independence that we've been looking for so long, but American energy dominance.
And Joel, it sounds like Trump is saying that it's not enough to just produce more energy. He wants the U.S. to produce the most energy so we don't have to be dependent on the Middle East and Russia. A pro-business message for sure, but not much of an environmental one. That must have been a whiplash for everyone you were working with.
Yeah, you know, of course everyone's walking on pins and needles. But frankly, because I was working on addressing the impacts of climate change that we were seeing right in front of us, and there were people in danger and so on, I thought despite the rhetoric, the new administration would still allow that work to continue. They may not celebrate it, but they would allow it to continue.
And so what happened?
So then I got a call from a friend who said, hey, I just was reassigned. You may want to check your email. And so I did, and I received an email at about 8 o'clock at night. Sure enough, I had been sort of unceremoniously and without notice reassigned from my job as the top climate policy advisor and the director of the policy office to an unspecified role in the Office of Natural Resources Revenue. That's the office that collects and disperses royalty income from the oil and gas and mining industries. So there was a very non-subtle jab at my profession.
They basically assigned you to work with your nemesis.
Well, yeah, you know, I think that the Office of Natural Resources Revenue does important work because they're dispersing those monies to tribes in some cases. But yes, I was being pushed away from advising on what I consider to be the most important issue facing the federal government right now into a job facilitating and working closely with the industry that's causing the problem. And this was essentially a purge. I was one of dozens of executives that were reassigned that night. And while every administration comes in and does a few of those for various reasons, no agency in any administration has ever come in and reassigned dozens of people without telling them or talking with them first. The office was as surprised as I was that I'd been reassigned there. So I wasn't even on the org chart. And they had to bend over backwards to try and figure out how to work me into an auditing operation. My background, of course, is not auditing.
I was about to say, are you an accountant? Do you?
No. No, I mean, I used to balance my checkbook when we did that sort of thing. Of course, it's all online now, but...
I couldn't do it then, and I can't do it now. If I got moved into Reveal's accounting, we'd be in trouble.
Right.
So you get reassigned. What happens then?
So I blew the whistle. I took the unusual step of also going public about it with an op-ed in the Washington Post.
So I have the op-ed here. Let me just read a little bit of this. I believe I was retaliated against for speaking out publicly about the dangers that climate change poses to Alaska Native communities. Then you write this pretty damning sentence. It is clear to me that the administration was so uncomfortable with this work and my disclosures that I was reassigned. I mean, it feels like you're poking the bull.
Well, I was, you know, but I fully expected to be fired right away, frankly. But I guess they had a good lawyer, too, and they realized that would be foolhardy. And as a whistleblower, I do or did enjoy some protections. I took some time off, and the day I came back, I got to the front door at Interior at DOI, and I hesitated, and I texted my attorney, and I said, do I have to do this? Do I have to go in here?
How did it feel to walk into that new office?
I opened the door and I walked in, and I couldn't have been more welcomed by staff. And, you know, it was extremely gratifying. Now, I don't want to get them in trouble by suggesting they were sympathizers, but they were just very professional and welcoming. They pointed out the stack of fan mail on my new desk there from people around the country, both civil servants and otherwise, that had been, in my absence, had been writing in to the agency saying, hey, great, thank you very much. We needed someone to speak out. Thanks for being our voice.
So now, a little-known climate change policy guy, a bureaucrat, starts making news.
Until very recently, Joel Clement had been working as a senior policy official in the Department of the Interior.
Mr. Clement, welcome to the program.
So now you're kind of at this crucial juncture of, do you stay, do you go? What do you do? What would be your final days working against climate change inside the federal government? I mean, what did you do?
I realized that I was going to lose my voice if I remained tucked away in this office. And so I wanted to keep my voice. I wanted to keep talking about this stuff. My voice at that point was more valuable to me than the income I had from that job. So it was time to get out so that I could be more vocal and not be tucked away in this office.
So on October 4th, 2017, you write another letter, a resignation letter. This one to Secretary Ryan Zinke, and you say something that a lot of people would think is obvious. Climate change is real and it's dangerous. But then you take it a step further by accusing Secretary Zinke and President Trump of being shackled to energy interests. And you say they cannot be trusted with our nation's resources in the end. Now, that's pretty powerful stuff. And you're encouraging others to come forward and speak out as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, I understand that a lot of people can't do it. I think that there are lots of different and creative ways that civil servants can have an impact right now. We're seeing some of that. In fact, the Office of Special Counsel reports that they have had a huge uptick in whistleblower complaints. It's just that they're not public like mine was. And they're speaking up when something's inappropriate. And unfortunately, this group of political appointees is ignoring the civil service in unprecedented ways. And because of that, they're screwing up a lot, and they're winding up in court a lot. And that's the way it goes, right? That's why we have, the judicial branch of the government. But, we'll see where they prevail. In some cases, of course, they are making some unprecedented moves that might stick for a while.
And that is what today's show is all about. Those unprecedented moves, giving oil and gas companies land and leeway to drill, despite the consequences for greenhouse gases, public land, or wildlife. We'll hear more from Joel Clement, the former policy director at the Interior Department, later in the show. But first, we're going to take you around the country, from Washington, D.C., to public lands in Utah and oil field waste pits in Wyoming.
Here, a bird thinks it's just landing in a pool of water to rest and feed and drink, and next thing you know, it's trapped, and you know it had a miserable death.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.